This morning we'll be starting a new class on the book of Thessalonians, but we'll probably spend at least half the class in the book of Acts, just kind of laying some fundamental thinking and teaching that we need to understand. Paul was converted in the ninth chapter of the book of Acts. Was he wholeheartedly accepted into the church as a great addition?
No.
No, he was viewed with suspicion, and I suspect there were quite a few people who probably didn't like it when he was around. They'd caused their family members to be imprisoned or possibly put to death, and that would be tough. And it would take time to accept the fact that this man is a genuine Christian. Matter of fact, Paul tells us here in this first verse in Galatians chapter 1 that he really wasn't accepted as the apostle to the uncircumcised until the Jerusalem conference. It makes it pretty clear. And when he talks to the Galatians, you can see there in that verse in chapter 1, 15 through 2, 5, he says, God separated me from my mother's womb, and then he called me. And it says then in verse 17, I went to Arabia, and I returned again to Damascus. And then after 3 years, went up to Jerusalem. So from the time of his conversion until the time he goes back to Jerusalem, 3 years have passed. Then he remains with Peter for 15 days. And then he says in verse 21, I went into the regions of Syria and Cilicia. And verse 22, I was unknown by face to the churches of Judea. But verse 2 is chapter 2, verse 1. Then after 14 years, I went up again to Jerusalem. So let's work this first. 14 and 3 equals 17 years. So from the time of Paul's conversion in chapter 9 to the events in chapter 15, 17 years have passed. So chapters 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and then the beginning of verse 15, or chapter 15, that's a 17-year period. So Paul's been a Christian for 17 years. And as he and Barnabas get up, what are they talking about?
Jesus.
No, at the Jerusalem conference, Peter got up, talked about his example. James got up and talked about what the old law say. What did Barnabas and Paul do?
They were trying to convince them that Jesus was the Christ, I believe.
Okay, but didn't they talk about their miracles? They talked about the signs and the wonders that God had wrought with them. And what I found interesting, and this is, where is it? Okay, at the very bottom of the page. When they saw, this is Peter, or Cephas, James, and, I'm sorry. John. Okay, let's just read it. When they saw that the gospel for the uncircumcised had been committed to me, as the gospel for the circumcised was to Peter. So where does that put Paul and Peter regarding the circumcised, the uncircumcised? Is it a level playing field now? Peter and Paul are equal. Peter to the Jews, Paul to the Gentiles. Now, how did they make this conclusion? Well, he says, verse 8, for he who worked effectively in Peter for the apostleship to the circumcised also worked effectively in me toward the Gentiles. And when James, Cephas, and John, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that had been given to me, they gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship, that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. So after chapter 15, what was the view of the church at Jerusalem to Peter and Paul? They are both apostles. Peter is opening the doors to the Jews. What's Paul now doing? He's going out and he's establishing churches among the Gentiles. So Paul is very actively involved as an apostle when he starts the second missionary journey. So the second journey starts in chapter 16. And originally it's going to be Paul and Barnabas again going out to do what? And I didn't ask you to read all this, so it might be a little difficult. Paul and Barnabas were going to go back to the churches they'd already started on the first journey and see how they're doing and deliver the decrees to them about circumcision and the Gentiles. What happened? A little problem with John Mark, right? They got into a sharp contention, and we don't know, it doesn't really appear, at least from the scriptures, that Paul and Barnabas ever worked together again and maybe ever saw each other again. And so Barnabas takes John Mark and goes off to Cyprus. Paul takes Silas and he heads out to the churches they'd established in Pamphylia and Pisidia. Antioch of Pisidia, Iconium, Lystra, Derbe. Who'd they pick up in Lystra and Derbe? Young man named Timothy. So now we've got Paul, Silas, Timothy leaving to go into the regions of Phrygia and Galatia. Now, if you look at the timeline, this is the time, I believe, that the Galatian churches were converted. Because when Paul writes to them, or actually, when Paul refers in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 1, as I gave order to the churches of Galatia, so also do you. So by the end of the second journey, by the end of the third journey, actually, are the churches of Galatia made? Are they established? So it's very likely that this is when that church is established. They then end up in Troas. And so Peter, I don't know what's going on today. Let's go ahead and turn to the second page. In Acts 16, 6, yes, Patrick.
Then we'll talk about the book of First Thessalonians. And we are not going into the book yet. When talking about Paul, because you told us about the book of First Thessalonians.
Yeah, I'm just giving an introduction. Then we'll get into the book. But it's good for us to know who Paul, Silas, and Timothy are, because they keep getting referred to in the book of Thessalonians. So I wanted to kind of lay some foundation here. All right, so something unusual happens in Acts 16. If you see in Acts 16, 6 through 8, you see how many times the word they is used? Then we get to verses 9 and 10, and what does it change to? We. So, who came? Who's the we? Who's the author of the book of Acts? Luke. So, Luke shows up, right? I mean, what else would the we mean? We, and then this we goes away until chapter 20, and then we go to Jerusalem, and then the we continues on the journey to Rome. Paul is with Luke again, and so this we tells us that for a short time, Luke is with us, and when we get to Philippi, Luke will stay behind. We won't hear about Luke again until we're going back to Jerusalem. After Thessalonica and Berea and Philippi and Corinth and Ephesus have already become strong, solid congregations. So in Philippi, everything is going well until Paul does what? He casts out a demon that was giving these men in Philippi a lot of money. And what do? Okay, they take him to the magistrates and they proclaim that Paul is teaching things that are contrary to Caesar's law. Now, did that work pretty well? Yeah. So when we get to Thessalonica, what are they going to do then? Because see, after Philippi, we go to Thessalonica. So Paul gets to Thessalonica and we can date this about 51 to 52 AD because when we see Gallio, you remember Gallio in chapter 18? The Jews bring Paul to Gallio. He was, the Roman historians tell us that he became proconsul in about 52 to 53, and we're about a year back. So the Thessalonian letter has been written somewhere around 51 to 52 AD. So Paul and Silas and Timothy come to Thessalonica, and things are going very well. Toward the bottom of page 2, for three Sabbaths, what did Paul do?
He
All right, and so you remember Paul in Romans 1, I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God unto salvation to who? To the Jew first, also to the Greek. This was Paul's marching orders. Remember, we talked about this last Sunday night. God promised a second gathering. The book of Acts is the second gathering of those people who were Jewish descent who had been scattered throughout the entire world, and so they went there first. Then, as Paul pointed out in chapter 15, after the Jews threw them out, one of the secondary reasons they went to the Gentiles was what? What did it do to the Jews? Okay, it provoked them to jealousy. And Paul said that I might gain some more. So Paul was using this. So, and it's interesting because the very thing that Paul said he wanted to have happen happens here. Because when the Jews see that the Gentiles are being converted by Paul, what do they do? Okay, they become envious. This is at the very bottom of page 2. Right? The Jews who were not persuaded became envious. Now, why would they become envious? Does that make sense?
Well, the gospel was being taught. And these people didn't want to hear that gospel being taught.
Okay. And where did the envy come in then? What's that?
Christ more or less not being equal to them, or they were not equal to Christ. They were jealous more or less.
Okay. All right. If somebody came into town and started converting people out of the Church of Christ into a denomination, would we feel jealousy? Or would we feel other emotions? Go ahead, Virgil.
There is such a thing as a godly jealousy that we should have.
Right.
There also is such a thing as a jealousy that is an evil type of jealousy, which we should not have. That we have to be able to divide between the two. I think that the Jews were jealous, the ones that we're talking about here, are the leaders of the Jewish people. They didn't want to take and lose their standing, for one thing. And wasn't it some of them was also getting a lot of money and a lot of income from that system, the old Jewish system. And when Paul started teaching the gospel of Christ, then he explains who Jesus is, and they don't like that. And so they're after him then.
Okay. Yeah, that's certainly involved here, because the Jews have the Jews been trying to convert these Gentiles all these years? But when Paul comes in and converts them all, they start feeling jealous. But the reason I'm emphasizing this is because when we get into the 1 Thessalonian letter, what we're going to find is that these Jews are treating the Christians terribly. And Paul says that they are doing to you what the Jewish people do to Christians in Judea. That's interesting. Who was the main runner who did that? It was Paul. So I'm sure as he wrote that, he's kind of going, oh, you know, it must have hurt a little bit. Okay, so the environment in Thessalonica is very hard. Okay, the Jews who were not persuaded became envious, and they took some evil men from the marketplace, and they set all the city in an uproar. Now, here's this small little church over here, the Church of the Thessalonians. And now the entire city is looking at that church, and what are they thinking? You got a target on their back now? These are people who are turning the world upside down. And now they've come here. And they are acting contrary to the decrees of Caesar. They are telling us there's another king that we should follow instead of Jesus. Are these pretty subtle ways to indict Christians? They're not true, but are they close enough to the truth? Is Jesus a king? Yeah. But what did Jesus tell Pilate? And Pilate could see right away he was no threat to Rome.
My kingdom's
not of this world. But he does have a kingdom, and we are citizens in his kingdom. And So they take security. What happens when somebody takes security if something goes wrong? If I put a bond for someone and they run away, what happens to me? Okay, I lose everything. All right. And we don't know what the security was. It could have been his life. Could have been his properties. We don't really know, but it wasn't worth the risk. So Paul leaves. Paul leaves Thessalonica. But is he ready to leave? No, he's not ready to leave. Are these babes ready to stand on their own? Are they in a worse situation than most of the churches that Paul has left? See, there's a lot of things that are going on. And when we get to the Thessalonian letter, we're going to see Paul expressing those things. So Paul doesn't want to have to leave. He wants to stay there. He wants to work with these new converts. We really don't know how long. It says that he reasoned in the synagogue for 3 weeks. Is it possible that that's when this happened? See, it's possible he'd only been there 3 or 4 weeks or a month. Now, we've all converted people. What kind of state are they in a month? Are they ready to be left alone, ready to be to fend for themselves? Clearly not. So Paul has some real serious emotional issues going on because he has to leave. Now, the first place they go in chapter 3, or on page 3, is they go to Berea. And the Bereans are more noble, right?
Yeah.
They search the scriptures. And many of them are converted, but when the Jews in Thessalonica, which is 50 miles away, when they hear that Paul's there, what do? Okay, they immediately leave and come and stir up the crowds. So immediately the brethren send Paul away to go by sea. Now he's on a ship all by himself going 300 miles. How long does it take for a ship to go 300 miles? Probably, two or three, four or five days. And what's Paul during those? Can he get on the cell phone and say, how are you guys doing there? No, he doesn't know what's happening in Thessalonica. And so he's praying and praying and praying, but by the time he gets to Athens, he sends... Yeah, there it is right there. Acts 17, 15 through 17, right under Athens. It says, those who conducted Paul brought him to Athens, receiving a command for Silas and Timothy to come to him with all speed and departed. So why does Paul want Silas and Timothy to come? To help him there? Or to find out what's happening in Thessalonica and give them some instructions on what they should do? So, and Paul's going to tell us that in the Thessalonian letter. I was so afraid, that's why I called Timothy. When Timothy came, he told me how well you were doing. I was so excited, that's why I sent him right back to you. And now he's come back to me, and that's when he writes the First Thessalonian letter. So, as we look then at the comparisons between Acts and First Thessalonians, in First Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, therefore, when we could no longer endure it, we thought it good to be left in Athens alone and sent Timothy, our brother and minister of God and our fellow laborer in the gospel of Christ, to establish you, encourage you concerning your faith. So that's why Paul said, I'm going to stay here alone in Athens. I'm going to send Timothy back. He's going to continue to work with these people. And then he tells them in verse 4, when we were with you, that we would suffer tribulation just as it happened, and you know. And when I could no longer endure it, I sent to know your faith, lest by some means the tempter had tempted you and our labor might be in vain. Now, the main reason I'm doing this is we get to see Paul, his emotions, his feelings, his interest. Is he just a preacher doing God's will, or is he a preacher doing God's will with great love and great care and concern for the people that he converts?
The latter.
And that's how we should be. Remember what he told the Galatians? Actually it was here in the Thessalonians. He said, like a nurse, I was so concerned about you. So when I could no longer endure it, I sent to know your faith, lest by some means the tempter had tempted you, and our labor might be in vain. So Paul's in Corinth now, or excuse me, Paul's in Athens. He's preaching that sermon to the Epicureans and the Stoics. He is working by himself. All the while, what's going on in his heart? Care and concern for Thessalonica. Not for Philippi. Luke's there. And when Paul writes the Philippians many years later, he says, my joy and my crown. You people are the epitome of what Christians ought to be. But the Thessalonians are in a different situation. I think partly because, you remember what he said? Who were the bulk of the converts here in Thessalonica? Remember he said many devout Gentiles. No, many devout Gentiles were converted, and not a few of the chief women. So we've got this huge Gentile component. Now, what do the Jews have that the Gentiles don't have when it comes to becoming Christians? What's that?
The old law.
Okay, the old law, which was the schoolmaster. That's why Paul could go into Iconium, Lystra, and Derbe, and then a year later come back and appoint what in every church? Elders. So, but they had the qualifications. See, we don't have that today. If we establish a church, how long is it going to take to get those men up and running to be elders? Because they can't be a novice, and they have to have children who believe, and they have to have, you know, just a litany of things. So, in the Thessalonica, Paul has some serious concerns about them. And so he talks about, again, this is in 1 Thessalonians 3, and verses 1 through 5, when we could no longer endure it. And then he says it again in verse 5, when I could no longer endure it, I sent to know your faith. We thought it good to be left in Athens alone. So the Thessalonian letter wasn't written from Athens, because Paul goes on to Corinth, and then at the very bottom, let's look at the very bottom of page 3. Now that Timothy has come to us from you and brought us good news of your faith and love, that you always have good remembrance of us, and greatly desiring to see us, as we also you. Now the first Thessalonian letter is written. So the first Thessalonian letter is written from Corinth. And it's written in Corinth just after Silas and Timothy come from Thessalonica. And then Paul's going to send him back. Now, this brings up an interesting consideration. You remember, it's the verse right above it. He tells the Corinthians, I was with you in weakness, in fear, and much trembling. Why do you think he was with them in weakness and fear and much trembling? We don't see that in Paul in his first missionary journey or his second missionary journey. What's going on in his heart? That he would say, I was with you in weakness and fear and much trembling. Well, let's turn to page 4. And now I'm not seeing it. So let's go over to what's the verse am I looking at? Acts chapter 18. Yeah, that's what I want. Acts chapter 18. Look at verse 5. When Silas and Timothy had come from Macedonia, specifically from Thessalonica, Paul was compelled by the Spirit and testified to the Jews and that Jesus is the Christ. So the fear and trembling went away after Silas and Timothy came. Paul was emboldened and strengthened, but not just by their presence. What had he told them? Paul, everything's going great in Thessalonica. These people are solid, they're strong. And this is very comparable to what he did after. Remember what happened in Ephesus? Paul told the Corinthians in the 1 Corinthians letter, I'm going to stay in Ephesus because a great door is open to me. But right after he sent that letter, what happened in Ephesus? There's this huge riot, remember? And Paul said, I thought I was dead. So then he leaves and he goes to Troas, but who's not there? See, he expected to meet Titus there. Titus was in Corinth. Titus was the one who was going to receive their response to his letter, and he didn't come. So he talks about, once again, inside were fightings, outside were fears, but it all went away when Titus came and he told me how well you were doing. So I think we've all been in situations like this. If you work really hard with somebody for many, many years and they are tottering and about to fall, does that have an impact on how you feel about things, on your attitude toward things? I know when I'm in that kind of situation, it's hard to get up and preach because you're so emotionally invested in what's happening that you can't think as clearly. You can't do as much because that's what's going on. And that's what's going on with Paul in Corinth. But as soon as they come and they tell Paul how well things are going, then Paul's constrained and he is happy and he starts preaching much more boldly. And it's interesting because Paul's inspired. Why should his emotional state have anything to do with his preaching? Yeah, he's still human. And the Holy Spirit would give him the words he needed, but would the Holy Spirit get him up there to preach them? See, that was Paul's side of it. So, all right, so let's go ahead and look at some of these points that he makes in the Thessalonian letter, and then we'll be able to start the book. So he starts, let's start at the top of page 4. But we, brethren, having been taken away from you for a short time, in presence, not in heart, endeavored more eagerly to see your face with great desire. We wanted to come to you, even I, Paul, time and again, but what was the problem? Satan was hindering Paul. So Paul had to leave Thessalonica and go to Berea. Well, he's got a good work in Berea. He figures at some point I'll be able to go back to Thessalonica. What do the Jews in Thessalonica do? They push him away. Now he's 350 miles away from Thessalonica in Athens. And after Athens is a complete, well, not a complete failure, but a dismal success, and he goes on to Corinth, now he's far, far away. And he still wants to come back, but what does Satan keep doing? Keeps putting stumbling blocks in the way. It's interesting that Paul would view what the Jews from Thessalonica were doing as Satan hindering him. Because were these Jews tools for Satan? So then in 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, that next verse, we give thanks to God always for you, making mention of you in our prayers, remembering without ceasing your work of faith, labor of love, and patience of hope. So before Paul left Thessalonica, he was seeing signs of a tremendously powerful group of people. And he goes on to say then in chapter 1, verse 6, you became followers of us and of the Lord, having received the word in much affliction, so that you became examples to all in Macedonia and Achaia who believe. For from you the word of God has sounded forth, not only in Macedonia and Achaia, but also in every place. Your faith toward God has gone out. So are they doing perfectly with evangelism? Their ability to stand firm under this persecution has gone back to Philippi. It's gone to Berea. It's gone to Athens. It's gone to Achaia, which is Corinth. And it is reverberating out, he said, into all the world. So this little congregation, this congregation of babes, because of their stance, have become a tremendous banner, a tremendous opportunity for other people to see the power of the gospel. And so then he goes on in chapter 2 and verse 1. He said, you yourselves know, brethren, that our coming to you was not in vain. But even after we had suffered before and were spitefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we were bold in our God to speak to you the gospel of God in much conflict. Now, this is one of the reasons I wanted to go through the book of Acts first, so we could see what happened to Paul in Philippi. And we could see what happened to Paul in Thessalonica, because he doesn't deal with that in the Thessalonian letter to the detail that Luke gives us. So Paul is put into prison in Philippi. He is beaten with rods. He is put into the lowest part of the prison in chains. And then, of course, the earthquake comes. And what does the Philippian jailer do? He wants to be baptized. He wants to be saved. And so Paul leaves Philippi, comes to Thessalonica. So he says here, you know when we came to you, how shamefully we'd been treated in Philippi. And within a few weeks, how shamefully we were treated in Thessalonica. And then a few weeks after that, how shamefully we were treated in Berea. So Paul had been persecuted and forced to leave Philippi and Thessalonica and Berea. So you yourselves know that we were spitefully treated. And then in chapter 2:14, he says, you brethren became imitators of the churches of God which are in Judea in Christ Jesus, for you also suffered the same things from your own countrymen, just as they did from the Judeans. So this is what's going out. This is what is making this church so important to Paul and his ministry. Then he goes on to say in chapter 3, verse 4, for in fact we told you before we were with you that we would suffer tribulation, just as it happened. And you know. Now, we've talked a little bit about this over the past few years. If a severe persecution were to come into America, what confidence do you have that most of the brethren would stand fast after seeing what's happened over the last 5 or 10 years, the way brethren act? When this pandemic came, most of them disbanded and just did it over the internet for a period of time. Does that give you a lot of confidence that if something bad like a persecution would come in, that they wouldn't do the same thing? And so these people are different. And to be honest with you, I would have high expectations of this congregation. I don't think anybody here, maybe one or two, but I don't think very, very many people here would stop coming regardless of the cost, even if it meant a prison or death. Because that's the kind of relationship that we've had through the years. And I've watched as we've made all these sacrifices and we've paid the price. And it, you know, you could be wrong. But I think that this congregation would do the same thing that the Thessalonians were doing here. Now, that's not flattery. I wouldn't say that if I didn't think it. Matter of fact, this is the only congregation where I would think it. The other congregations I was at, I wouldn't have expected that at all. Because people show themselves by their conduct when you've been around them for 5 or 10 years. And you get a pretty good assessment of the kind of people they are. So Paul here is complimenting them and help and working with them. Now in chapter 4, he says, we urge you and exhort you in the Lord that you should abound more and more, just as you receive from us how you ought to walk and please God, for you know what commandments we gave you through the Lord Jesus. So Paul has a concern. There's a moral element here that he deals with, and he goes into it in chapter 4, verse 3, which is the next verse there, the third or fourth one from the bottom of page 4. This is the will of God, your sanctification, that you should abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and honor, not in passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God. So this is a concern. Matter of fact, in the decrees, there are 4 things that those people in Jerusalem said the Gentiles need to hear. Remember what they were? Fornication, idolatry, things strangled, and blood. All right, so fornication was a serious Gentile problem. Is it a serious American problem? Yeah, it's the same thing here. Sermons need to be preached like this. And brethren need to be reminded, because it's everywhere. It just seeps out of the television, seeps out of the newspaper, seeps out of the people that we are around. Evil companionship. It can corrupt, and so we need to be as concerned about it here as Paul was. Then he's also concerned about brotherly love, so he hits that next. Concerning brotherly love, you have no need that I should write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another, and indeed you do so toward all the brethren who are in all Macedonia, but we urge you, brethren, to increase more and more. So the relationship of Christians to Christians is a very important aspect of this new congregation's growth. Then, chapter 4, we got a doctrinal problem. I do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning those who have fallen asleep, lest you sorrow as others who have no hope. So, what was the concern there? You remember 1 Corinthians 15? What were the Corinthians teaching along this line? The resurrection, it's already come. So, what does that leave us? If the resurrection's already gone by, what happens to us when we die? Yeah, there's nothing there. So, I think maybe that was percolating here among the people. Patrick, did you ever hear it?
Yeah, look at the city of Thessalonica, because it was a commercial city. And we had Macedonia.
What the book? And it also was the idol worship city. Because if you look at 1 Thessalonica chapter 2, I mean chapter 1, verse 9, Paul told them, Paul made it very clear. They had a turn for idol worship to the living God, to the actually of idol worship until the gospel had a wonder. When the gospel went there, they changed everything. You see, so we should understand, this is why the book is very important to us, because as we go further, we'll see some chapter to do what people call the raptures, and where you see, we see it as we go further. But these teachings are very false. So we have to be very careful how we deal with this book, because the book will expose every evil deeds that are existing in our world today.
Right. Yeah, and that I think is what he's dealing with here. And of course, by the second Thessalonian letter, what have they decided to do? Because the Lord's coming back any time, so what should we not worry about?
Working.
Let's just borrow money. Let's live on borrowed money, because the Lord's coming back. We'll never have to pay it back. What does Paul say about that? If a man won't work, don't let him eat. So there were some serious issues going on, as there always are. When you bring new converts out of the world, are they going to just know everything right away? No, they're going to bring some of their problems in, and that's what Paul's dealing with here. And it does, as Patrick was saying, it does give us an insight into the problems and issues that are going on there. So he goes on to say in chapter 1, verse 5, concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you, for yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. Now, don't you find it ironic that these people 2,000 years ago were proclaiming that the Lord was going to be returning any time? How wrong could they be? I mean, here we are 2,000 years later. And how many times since have people done exactly the same thing? This is it. This is generation. This is the generation Revelation was talking about. This is the generation when Jesus is going to come back. This is the generation when everything is going to be fulfilled. Well, just about everyone, right? Every generation. Are we any different? There's all kinds of that today. I did an article on that a few years ago. Back when we were kids, I say we, I'm in my 60s, the late great Planet Earth was the book that everybody was talking about. Well, did that happen? No. And the Jehovah's Witnesses are saying 1975, Lord's coming back in 19. Did that happen? See, so we're looking back on this, what is it, 30, 40 years ago now, 50 years ago sometime, or almost 50 years ago, and it didn't happen. Now we got Left Behind. Well, Left Behind came out, what, about 2000? Or was it further back than that? I can't really remember. But it, as time passes, how much chance is there that that's going to come true? So the Thessalonians, the information given to them, I think is very practical, because they thought just like we do. And 2,000 years later, here we still are. So concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. So, is he coming this year? Next year? Could be 1,000. Could be another 2,000. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, so you kind of have both ends of the spectrum, right? You have this, and then you have 2 Peter 3, where people are like, well, it's been the same ever since. You know, he's never coming, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of extremes, isn't
yeah, that's
it?
That's right. We got the pendulum going in two different directions, and we're trying to stay right in the middle. We know he's coming. We don't know when. So every day we're ready. All right, the last thing he says, and it's interesting because this is a relatively young church, but he says, we urge you, brethren, to recognize those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord. Now, what is the only office in the church that you could say they are over you in the Lord? Excuse me?
Elders.
Elders. So this church is a couple months old, but what's the indication here? They have elders. And like I mentioned, if a Jew is converted, got believing children, got all the qualifications, Paul lays his hands on him so that now he understands the scriptures. He's not a neophyte or a novice because he's been a Jew all his life. Is he ready to be an elder? See, clearly, well, he must have been, because remember Paul went on the first missionary journey. He went from Antioch to Iconium to Lystra to Derbe, and then as he returned, what is he doing? In Acts 14:23. Pointing elders in every church. Well, Antioch and Iconium are probably 2 or 3 years old now. By now. What about Lystra and Derbe? Well, they're just a few months old, but they all have elders. And again, it's clear that it's because these Jewish people were there that that could happen. So there's every indication here in 1 Thessalonians 5, 12, and 13 that there are elders that are already functioning, because you need to recognize who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very, high, very highly in love for their work's sake. Now, could you say that of an evangelist? Is an evangelist over you in the Lord?
No.
No. Could you say that of a teacher? A deacon? The only group I think that you could really fit here, unless there was an apostle among them, which there isn't, so it would have to be elders. So again, it's very interesting as we get into it more and more to see how the New Testament organization very quickly was established in churches because of those Jews. And those Jews were very helpful. Devout Jews were perfectly poised to become elders in the church. Virgil?
Yeah, this is interesting and good teaching for us, Alan. The eldership is something that I think has been diminished over the years. And it is something that, to be what is considered a good elder, you have to be a good businessman, you got to be a good song and dance man, you got to do this, you got to do that. But if you're a deacon, now you're on the way up. Or if you're a teacher, same thing. And I see this, and I think it's being misused myself. The qualifications for an elder are a serious matter, and they need to be addressed that way.
Right.
And the qualifications for a deacon and for a teacher, there's qualifications for all that. For anything you do within the Lord's body, there is a qualification. Number one is faithfulness. If you're not a faithful person, you're not fit to do any of those things. And from there on out, it spreads. And it needs to be taught on, and especially, you've made the statement many times, it's just as true as can be, that there's two times that most congregations are in great peril: when they appoint elders or they're looking for a preacher.
Yep.
One of the two. And it is so true. I've seen it over and over myself.
Yeah.
And it's a time when people need to take and put their thinking cap on, go back to the scriptures, and sit down and take a look at it.
That's right.
Okay, so next week we will start in 1 Thessalonians chapter 1 and verse 1, and we'll go ahead and go verse by verse, and whither then, we'll see. Thanks, everybody.